Well, we're back. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. Thanks for joining us today. We're here from the studios of KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for
Studio
joining us.
Studio C.
Studio C, yes, yes. Studio C. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you listening to our program. If you like our program, also take a look at our blog on the internet, and it's located at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Actually, not an emphasis on BS. We'd like to have fun with it, but we're pretty honest with everything that we put up there.
So what are you saying? Emphasis on the LT?
Yes, a left turn, the left part of it. That's the emphasis. Anyhow, take a look at our blog. It can also be located, if you do a Google search, by simply typing in LTOBS, and we come up at the top of the queue. So I encourage you to certainly take a look at it and participate in our comment section. So,
and LTOBS is lobster misspelled.
Yeah, that's true. We should do a lobster search on it, see where it comes. I love lobster. Anyhow, we ended the last segment talking about the deteriorating
brain
state of mind
personality
of
that's all
George W. Bush. I mean, his mind was kind of already on the brink to start with, but all the unsettling events to the Bush administration, much less the rest of the world, really, if you think about it, are beginning to take its toll on the president. And not only are they taking the toll on the president's, on the president's mental health, it's also taking, finally, these events are finally beginning to resonate with the public in general. And in the last several weeks, Bush has seen his approval ratings steadily decline. And one of the polls, I think, is that a Zogby poll, Tom?
There's AP's latest poll from Ipsos, a group that I've never really written about, shows Bush's is down to 37% approval with 59% disapproving of his job performance, the lowest ever. This poll...
Now, when they say the lowest ever for his presidency.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think they take polls for private citizens, but...
No, I mean lowest compared to other presidents.
Oh, no, for him.
Yeah, right.
His lower, not the lowest for any president.
Okay.
This poll was taken after Bush announced the Alito nomination. Note, those who strongly disapproved of his job performance, 42%, were more than twice that of those who strongly approved, 20%, for the first time ever. Again, is this a sign that the cultists are wandering away? And the Zogby poll has him at 51% now supporting, considering impeachment if Bush lied about Iraq.
Now that's
they have to be told again.
Yeah, right.
A day after Zogby issued his latest poll approval and found that Bush's approval rating in their poll fell below 40%. Below 40%.
That's low.
Yeah, the mayors of Dubuque get higher polls than that.
Right.
And that Bush was losing significant support in the Midwest and West, as well as amongst Republicans.
Oh, wow. Well, the president can take solace in the fact that there's somebody that has even lower public approval ratings than the president. And who might that be?
Jack the Ripper?
No, he actually has higher than this person. This person actually is none other than Tricky Dick Cheney. The vice president has approval ratings, people who approve of his job performance. You want to guess what it is? Something? Any guess?
No,
take a stab at it. Just take a stab.
I'll see if it's lower. Okay, like 12% view him favorably.
Oh, well, actually, it's a little bit higher than that.
19%.
19% say that in recent polls say that give a approval rating to Vice President Dick Cheney.
You know, this
is a real president,
by the
way. This
reminds me of one of those angles that we've talked about in the past, but I want to repeat. I think one of the reasons that they being Fitzgerald and that grand jury investigation,
yes,
may be focusing on the
Cheney
way they have, they're focusing on Scooter,
right,
and then with possibly Cheney, and they want to take Cheney out first.
It could
because
be.
If they were to actually take Bush out first, that would put Cheney as president, who would be more remote and harder to get out. So I think they're working up the this is one possible strategy, working up.
Right.
And so if we have his mind deteriorating and the other guy's legal status deteriorating. Right. We have like a race. Who's going to be out first if it goes our way?
Well, you know what I find out interesting, and you just mentioned it briefly, and in the world of the internet, this is a topic that's been out there for some time now, but it's surprisingly to me, it's actually kind of working its way somewhat into the mainstream media, not totally, but it's beginning to grow some legs, is the calls for the impeachment of Bush. This is something that's been out on the internet ever since really the invasion of Iraq, so better part of the two, almost close to 3 years now, because I know I've seen it on there for a long time, and by a long time I mean 2.5-3 years. Right after that, it was anybody who was a thinking person who read soon realized that this was just all cooked. I mean, the evidence has been out there for some time, and sometimes the public takes a long time to have it beaten over their head with a 2x4, but maybe it's beginning to resonate now finally that, hey, you know, these guys are lying. You know, maybe Joe Sixpack at home is finally beginning to realize that he's been lied to. Kids in this community have been sent off to war or volunteered to go off to war, and they're not retracting their statements. They're still, they're shifting the Bush administration.
But a stronger reason for their views shifting is not just the war, because most of them don't go to it and have no children. It is the economy is shifting, and so now they're using the war as something to talk about why they want to get rid of them.
Well, that's true. It could be. But what's important, though, in this poll is that the discussion of an impeachment is finally making its way into the mainstream media. It's been on the internet, it's been on political blogs, it's been on the mind of many progressives for a few years now, anyhow.
Broken the surface.
Yeah, it's broken the surface. This story might have legs, and in the next 3 months, that's why I say, this is not on our topic, but I think this is a very crucial time right now for progressives to really, the way our system is set up right now, progressives really have to push the Democratic Party very hard to really stand up to this. If the Democrats don't stand up to it, they're really, really going to lose. I think they're going to lose a lot of their credibility that they've already lost, and they're going to lose more from more mainstream people as time goes on, more so than they have lost. They've got to stand up to the nomination of Alito. And they've got to really start some major Democratic political figure, maybe Dennis Kucinich. Somebody needs to bring this up.
Well, you're working up to work for the Democrats. I thought you were going to get a blog, get a radio show, come down hard on Bush and Cheney.
Gee, I've already done that, but we don't have the power, Tom. But, the people, progressives out there, progressives and liberals and fair-minded people too, not just because it's just not our
fair-minded
domain.
People are always those that think the way you do.
Yeah, right. Fair-minded people really need to push the Democratic Party, because we are now living in a time, if you take things like the bankruptcy bill, the debtor's prison that the guy in the Alito case was, he's basically in a debtor's prison. This is the world that we live in now. And the Democrats, they've been a part of this. They've been complicit in this for a long time, and they finally got to back away from this stuff if they want to have any political future, and beyond that, if our country wants to have any economic and political freedoms. This is a very crucial
time. Here's another way of looking at it. They didn't want to take a position because they didn't want to backfire on them, so now not taking a position is backfiring on them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They're not taking a position is going to backfire on them, but they being the Democrats.
But they got to stop looking like, me too, we're here, wait, we'll catch up.
Right. they got to start calling for the withdrawal of troops, not just these, withdraw a little bit, just withdraw the troops from Iraq. They need to stand up for the working guy out there, not some big corporation. And, this is part of what is frustrating about the Democratic Party, is nobody in the Democratic Party, and this is where they're making their big mistake, nobody out there is standing up for the working guy. I don't really see any major Democratic figure saying, we got to stand up for the working guy in this country, the working gal, the working person, the working families. They're still beholden to these major corporate interests.
But they don't have to, because before the working people didn't actually go out and vote, and now the machines are rigged so that even if they did go out and vote, it'll come out the other way anyway.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
But, you know, they've got to really stoke the fires to get people interested and show that they're because I think they're going to miss out on a really splendid opportunity to wrest control from these corporate interests of our country, you know, and we might already be down that path too far that it's going to be so hard to turn back. But there, you know, I guess there's still hope that we could have some changes, progressive changes for our country. So I guess I'll get off my soapbox now on this, Tom, but I really feel very strongly about this. Democrats have a major opportunity, and I would say even beyond an opportunity, they have a major obligation to really stand up to this and come out and really strongly state a case to support the working man and get rid of these guys, keep guys like Alito off the Supreme Court. I mean, that's really, really important. And if they don't, you're exactly right. It's going to backfire on them by not taking any position. So.
Well, now that we've driven the listener into panic and depression, let's leave him some things to think about and maybe laugh at.
Okay, well, the first one is not to laugh at, but it's kind of a unfortunate story that Tom pulled off the air.
Oh, yeah, no, this is a sad story, but it's one that I think people ought to know because I haven't seen it in the regular news.
Right.
This comes from the National Enquirer.
Right. The one that first reported about Bush's drinking and his erratic behavior, which is beginning to bear out.
This was picked up by This Is London, which is a British newspaper, but it's really the originated in National Enquirer. Muhammad Ali may have just months to live. It has emerged yesterday. Not very good grammar, but the 63-year-old boxing great who has battled Parkinson's disease for 20 years can no longer talk and is shutting himself away from those closest to him. His daughter, Lila, said, "It is painful for me because I would love to sit down and talk with my dad about this way he used to be when he was my age, when he was in his prime, because we're so alike. Can't really do that, though. I can't share a lot of things with him. He likes doing simple things to draw and color and do magic tricks, but his attention span is very short," she said. A very close family friend says his condition has worsened. At this point, he may only have months to live.
Right.
And I'd hate to see him go. You know, I met him at the talk at us at our university, and he's a kind of magnificent guy.
Yeah, right. You know, for our listeners that aren't old enough to know, Muhammad Ali was, aside from being a great boxer, he was also a very important political figure because he refused to be drafted, basically, you know, and he lost his title. He was a conscientious objector, I guess.
He did that. That's why he was prosecuted.
Right, he was prosecuted, stripped of his title. He didn't box for about, I want to say about 3 years during the prime.
And for those who don't know, his
prime of his career.
His original name was Cassius Clay,
right.
Born in Kentucky.
Right, Louisville, Kentucky.
Right, and his name became Muhammad Ali when he became a black
Muslim.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, he defied the government in a really strong political movement. I want to say that was in 1967.
And he didn't defy the government in a showy way. He just stood up and said, no.
No, I'm not going to do it, you know.
In a very gentle way, wore a tie, went through the whole thing.
Right.
You know, just a superb guy.
Right, he was. And, I can't help but think with, we don't have a lot of time, but with Muhammad Ali, I can't help but wonder that the Parkinson's was a result of the boxing. You know?
Getting, of course, you know, like certainly contributed to it, getting right. Banged in the head for 51 fights.
Yeah, and you know, he was a hell of a boxer too, really was. I remember the Thriller in Manila, you know, with him and Joe Frazier. They had some pretty epic fights and bygone era. And sorry to hear that story.
He's added several phrases to the English language.
That's right. Float like a butterfly,
sting like a bee.
That was actually, they did another tag on it for a commercial too. A sweet smell of some deodorant and Ali, you know. And what was really classic is ever see an interview with him and Howard Cosell. I mean, those were just really great. Howard Cosell and his kind of that weird draw of New York draw he had in Ali, and he'd put his fist up to Cosell, and Ali really knew to ham it up for the camera. I mean, he was a showman, you know, he really was in many different ways. So we'll keep an eye on Muhammad Ali. One last story we have here, and I think this should take us to the end of this segment, is I heard that kind of an interesting story. Well, here on Left Turn on Bird Street, we have Tom has a real interest in science, as do I. Tom actually, I think, went to a vocational scientific high school when in your youth, if I'm not mistaken, in Baltimore, did you not, or junior high?
Well, sort of. It taught you to be a janitor in the university science department. Baltimore Polytechnic Institute.
Yeah, right. And on our show from time to time, like we mentioned in the last few segments, we've had Dr. Robert Ulanowitz, who is a science. What is Bob, a ecological statistician?
Yeah,
okay. So we have an interest in science, and we try to keep it up, bring it into our show. But there's one story that is on Popular Science in the recent edition. I think you can find it on their website, popularscience.com. Everybody who goes into sciences, of course, wants to be like something glamorous, like a marine biologist, a environmentalist. Well, the Popular Science has come up with not the 10 best jobs in science, but the 10 worst jobs. And these are some real ringers. Okay, starting from number 10 and working our way down. Any guess what number 10 might be, Tom?
I couldn't say.
Okay, and this is how, I'm using their words here. I'm not making this up. And this is from popularscience.com. Orangutan pea collector, as in pea. And
You mean that pee? Oh, that
right.
Pee. Oh, the liquid pee.
Right.
Okay.
And it starts out by saying their work is non-invasive for the apes, that is. Basically people go around. I don't know if we can read some of this on the radio, so I'm going to tread
lightly. Science.
Yeah, it's science. But, the FCC, John Ashcroft, it's not John Ashcroft. Alberto Gonzalez might come knocking at the door at KRBS or Studio C and say, you can't say that. I've been peed on, yes, says anthropologist Cheryl Knott of Harvard University. Knott is a pioneer of non-invasive monitoring of steroids through urine sampling. Translation, look out below. For the past 11 years, Knott and her colleagues have trekked into Gunung Palung National Park in Borneo, Indonesia, in the search of endangered primates.
I'm going to make a quick guess. They wear safety goggles and they keep their mouths shut.
Right. For more pea-catching precision, they attach bags to poles and follow beneath the animals.
Mm.
It's kind of gross when you get
That's
hit.
How gravity works.
But it's the best way to figure out what's going on in their bodies, Knott said.
What's number nine?
Number nine is NASA ballerina. Her dance partner is super-sensitive robot. Now, this one's not that funny. A lady basically puts a suit on and dances around with a bunch of
To what
monitors.
Purpose?
Well, so they, let's see. Leminsky's, this is the motto, skin is being developed to assist in NASA's future space exploration plans. Trips that will rely heavily on robots to get robotic movements that simulate human movements. Okay, that's not that bad. Number eight, do-gooder. Bugs, bears, and a melting earth. Call this a vacation? Every year, thousands of desk jockeys sign up for the non-profit Earthwatch Institute and pay as much as $3,000 per week to pitch in on scientific expeditions. While some select romantic projects like studying the giant statues and the ancient inhabitants of Easter Island in the Pacific, others choose to slog through peat bogs near Churchill, Manitoba.
Wait. I know why it's not a good job. It's because you pay to have it rather than get paid.
Right. Ducking polar bears and fending off biblical swarms of back flies, bloodletting mosquitoes, and deer flies known locally as bulldogs. Okay, number seven. This is a particularly interesting one. Number seven, semen washer. And as Popular Science says, it's a job that separates the boys from the men. Okay, their real title is usually something like chirobiologists or laboratory technicians, but at sperm banks around the country, they are known as semen washers. I don't know.
Wouldn't that sort of interfere with the whole?
Well, they work at sperm banks and they got to clean up afterwards and that kind of stuff. So
they're not actually washing the sperm itself. They're washing the residue.
Residue. Sure. They work at sperm banks. And the guy goes and gives a sample. They got
the glamour of it.
The glamour.
Would that make them sex workers?
Yeah, I guess it would. In a sense, we're going to get the attorney general after these guys now. Okay, next one is volcanologist. Okay, that's somebody who runs into a volcano. That sounds kind of exciting.
Studies volcanoes.
Yeah.
Volcanoes.
Okay, that's number six. Number five, this is a good one. This is like, this is very Simpson-esque. It's a nuclear weapon scientist. They've mastered fusion. Next up, filing.
Wait. Do those guys eat donuts all day?
The job hasn't been any fun since the disastrous espionage trial against Wen-Ho Lee in 1999. Now it's gotten worse. It talks about Lee. After some serious abusive jailhouse tactics, you know, basically they don't get to do anything anymore because of Wen-Ho Lee.
That's a really good job as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, yeah. I got a job, paid, don't do anything. Sit there, don't do
anything.
That's
a great, there's like a wind, what do they call those guys in Japan?
I think these scientists are approaching this from the right perspective.
Window watchers in Japan who they're just on the payroll, but they just sit in their room and watch the window for 8 hours. Okay, I want that job. Okay, number five. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this. Extremophile excavator. Basically, they dig up muck. Smelly muck.
Extremophile excavator.
Yeah, they dig up dirty muck.
Never has success smell less sweet.
Okay, so let me read a brief description. Now imagine you're on a tightly... take some of the most dramatic shoreline you can imagine. Seabirds, gigantic mountains, and volcanoes. Truly dramatic. Now imagine that you are on this beach tightly surrounded by 100 overweight and extremely flagellant people. And describing this, Ron Ormeland says, of Mono and Sears Lakes in California, where his U.S. geological team has been working for years. Basically, they dig up microbes, stinky things.
Flatulent? What's that got to do with it?
He says because it's stinky. Their work is really, really stinky and unpleasant. Oh, you know,
okay.
You imagine you're on the nicest beach in the world, but it stinks and you're surrounded by, you know, unpleasant, unsavory things.
Not girls.
Number three. This is my favorite. Number three. The worst scientific job of the number three out of the top 10, the worst sign. If you want to take a stab at this, I'll give you a hint. This ties into our earlier discussion about intelligent design and the push to remove science from the classroom.
Couldn't guess.
Okay, this is perfect. Kansas biology teacher.
Oh, listen, isn't that an oxymoron?
Right. Exactly. And this is how science, popular science puts it. One line description. On the front lines of science's de-evolution.
Well, you know, that's another job in here that's paid to do nothing.
Right. Oh, that's too much. Yeah, science, Kansas biology teacher. Those guys, they're an unloved bunch in Kansas. Okay, number two.
That's like an Oklahoma intellectual.
Yeah, right. thankfully, the show isn't heard in Oklahoma that we know of, anyhow.
It
won't be anytime soon. Okay, number two. This is a good one. I feel like a little kid reading these, you know, like looking in the dictionary at dirty words. Okay, number two.
In the bathroom doing this?
Yeah, right. Manure inspector. The smell is just the start of the nastiness. Yeah,
that's crap. I can tell it.
Okay,
I got it 10 feet away. It's crap.
Almost 1.5 billion tons of manure are produced annually by animals in this country, 90% of it from cattle. And it's loaded with nasty contaminants, Salmonella, E. coli. So inspect that stuff. That's dangerous. Not only is it smelly, that's dangerous
work. In terms of billions of tons, how would people figure in that? I wonder what that would be.
Oh, God almighty. Okay, and then the number one worst science job there is, drum roll, human lab rat. Let me say it again, a human lab rat.
But you know that's in the National Institute of Health hires college students to do exactly that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it says here. Pharmaceutical companies have long relied on hard-up college students to act as guinea pigs. Dudes, I was in the double-blind Viagra trial, and I got paid. But did you know that the pesticide business hiring too? Oh my goodness! So there you have. We're almost out of time here. But those are the 10 worst science jobs as put together by Popular Science. So you've been listening to...
Wouldn't that be Unpopular Science?
Those are very unpopular science. You've been listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. My name is Dan Gowerthy, along with my colleague...
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us. We certainly appreciate you spending some time with us. Our show can also be heard on KQRP in Salida, California. Thanks for listening to us there in WCRV. And I just want to read our one disclosure that There you have it. That's it for Tom. That's it for Left Turn on Bird Street. This program is copyrighted 2005 by Tom Nadel and Dan Gowerty. All rights reserved, except for the parts we borrowed from other people. See you in 2 weeks. Thanks for joining us.